edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you with the kind assistance of KBIA. Tonight's presentation is based on a short story by Fitz James O'Brien called The Wondersmith, first published in the Atlantic Monthly in 1859. It is a Christmas story, but not like your typical feel-good holiday tale. Its tone is more like Edgar Allan Poe rather than Charles Dickens. Due to violent episodes in the show, parental caution is strongly advised. The Wondersmith takes place in a sordid back alley called Galash Street, lined with unsavory shops and inhabited by desperate, poverty-stricken people. There is a rundown bird shop and a shabby bookstall across the alley from Madame Philomel, the fortune teller. Next door is the shop of Herr Hippe, commonly called the Wondersmith. It is a blustery December evening, and the shutters are up on most of the shops. The Wondersmith sits in front of the fireplace's flickering blaze. On the table in front of Herr Hippe is a square, large box made of dark wood. The profound silence is broken by a peculiar scratching at the door.
Ah, Philomel, you are come. No more fortunes to be told this evening?
No. The Christmas season is not a good one for me. People are too joyful and apparently not concerned with their fate.
Have you brought the souls?
They are here in this black bottle. Ah, I have had such trouble with them.
Are they of the right brand? Wild, dark, devilish souls? We want no essence of milk and honey, you know.
You will see. You will see. They are ethereal demons, every one of them. Do you think that I, old midwife that I am, don't know the squall of the demon child from that of the angel baby the very moment they are delivered?
Oh, I beg to test them. Ah, it will be a proud day when we loose them upon the cursed children. Through the length and breadth of the land, the children shall die. Then we, the despised Bohemians, the gypsies, as they call us, will be once more lords of the earth, as we were in the days when men lived in the woods and hunted game in the forest. Toys, indeed. We will give the little dearer toys. Toys that all day will sleep calmly in their boxes, seemingly stiff and wooden and without life. But at night, when the souls enter them, they will arise and surround the cots of the sleeping children and pierce their hearts with their keen, venomous blades. Toys, indeed. Oh, yes, I will sell them toys.
Have you got your first batch, Herr Hippe? Are they all ready?
Oh, yes. Yes, they are ready. Our little soldiers are here in this box.
Here, let me examine one. There are so many. Ah, yes, exquisitely carved wooden miniatures and wonderfully painted. Oh, and each has an expression of supreme wickedness. The small black bead-like eyes glitter with the fire of universal hatred, and each of the mannequins seems to be holding some miniature weapon.
Yes, the little men, scowling like demons, clasp in their wooden fingers swords delicate as a housewife's needle. The women clutch tiny daggers ready to wreak a terrible vengeance.
Good. You do immaculate work, Herr Hippe. These little ones look as if they have mischief in them, and so they shall when brought to life.
Yes, the gypsies will triumph over the enemy, and it will all take place during the holiday season.
And with the souls I have brought, instead of innocent carolers and pleasant acquaintances, their houses will be filled with miniature assassins.
We will test them in a moment. First, though, a little celebration is in order. It is not Christian blood, but a good stout wine. To the gypsies.
To the gypsies! May they once again rule the world. It is good. It consoles us for our misfortunes. It carries us back, as if by magic, to the land that we once ruled. It darkens the memory of all the evils that we have for centuries suffered.
May this evil land be cursed! How does your eye get on, Philomel?
Excellently! It is finished. I have it here.
Yes, it is beautiful. Perfect. If it were not twice the size of a human eye, one would not be able to tell the difference. And oh, how it stares.
It looks like the eye of the devil himself. Yet it works marvelously. I can place it anywhere and see what it sees. It is my second sight. Ha ha ha! I keep the eye in the silken purse.
It is a work of the most flawless craftsmanship.
As are your mannequins. We will fabricate millions of the little murderers by Christmas Eve, and when the households are all asleep, and the children are waiting for Santa Claus to come, the small ones will troop from their boxes, and the children will die. Before we test our little friends, is your daughter Zanella in bed, Herr Heepa? Are we assured there will be no interruptions?
No one is stirring about the house. I sent her to bed some time ago.
I will ensure that we are not disturbed. I will put my eye outside the door to watch. Just a moment. Now for it. I have the bottle ready to deliver its cargo of malicious souls. Herr Heepa, prepare your mannequins.
The little devils are quite ready to be turned loose. I will merely place this linen cloth over the box. Now, take the stopper from the bottle and hold the linen cloth tightly about the neck. Yes, yes, just like that. We remove the cloth and...
By all the gods, just look at them. What a wonderful transformation. They're all moving. What a glory to behold. The bead-like eyes glittering. The thin, wicked lips quivering. The tiny hands sheathing and unsheathing their little swords and daggers.
I think you'll do. Treacherous, cruel, and bloodthirsty, every one of them. All goes marvelously well.
But hold. Each furious little figure is plunging sword or dagger into their neighbor. They need something to feed on, or they will break each other to bits. You had better gather them up quickly, Herr Heepa.
Oh, they are perfect devils, magnificent little demons. But you are correct. We cannot have them destroying each other. I will replace the linen cloth. Is the bottle ready? Good. Hold the linen tightly around the neck. Now, cork the bottle quickly. And once the linen cloth is removed, behold!
Oh, Herr Heepa, what a delectable sight. The little darlings are once more inanimate, strewn about like dead bodies after a great battle. Yet the sinister looks are still frozen on their faces. Delightful!
They must have blood, though. Help me gather them up and put them into the box. Mr. Pipple, who owns the bird shop across the way, is asleep, but I have a key that opens his door. We'll let them loose among the birds. It'll be rare fun.
Magnificent. Let us go this instant. But first, let me fetch my eye.
The fortune teller pocketed her eye after giving it a polish with the silk handkerchief. The two gypsies departed from Mr. Pipple's, carrying the box of mannequins with them. As they crept stealthily across the alleyway, a shadow detached itself from a nearby doorway and entered the Wondersmith's shop, ascending a flight of stairs to the attic. Here the shadow stopped at the entrance to one of the chambers and knocked at the door.
So, Nella, are you asleep?
Oh, Solon, is it you? I thought it was Herr Heepa. Come in.
Has he left you without light again, Sonella? No matter, I brought my little lantern with me.
Thank you, Solon. He never gives me any light of an evening, but bids me go to bed. And I long so to read those nice books that you lend me, Solon. Please, come take my hand.
With pleasure.
I have been out all day with the organ, and I am so tired, Solon. Not sleepy, but weary, I mean. Poor little Furbelow was sleepy, though, and he's gone to bed. The poor little monkey has to work harder than I.
I am weary too, Zonella. Not as weary as you, though, for I sit in my little bookstall all day long and do not drag round an organ and a monkey and play old tunes for pennies, but weary of myself, of life, of the hump that I carry on my shoulders.
Well, you should not be melancholy amidst your books, Solon. Gracious! If I could only sit in the sun and read as you do, how happy I should be. But it's very tiresome to trudge round all day with that nasty organ. And then the boys play such bad tricks on poor Furbelow, throwing him hot pennies to pick up and burning his poor little hands. I'd much rather sit in your bookstall and read.
I have nothing but odd volumes in my stall. Perhaps that's proper, though, for, after all, I am nothing but an odd volume myself.
Come, don't be melancholy, Solon. Sit down and tell me a story. I'll bring Furbelow to listen.
You want a story, do you? Well, I'll tell you one. Only what will your father say if he catches me here?
Arequipa is not my father. He's a gypsy, and I know I'm stolen. If I were his child, do you think he would treat me as he does? Make me trudge around the city all day long with a barrel organ and a monkey to keep me up in a garret and give me so little to eat? I know I'm not his child, for he hates me.
Listen to my story, Zonella, and we'll talk of that afterwards. Let me sit at your feet, where I can be cozy. Yes, now, there once lived in a great city a poor little hunchback. He kept a second-hand bookstall, where he made barely enough money to keep body and soul together. He was very sad at times, because he was a hunchback and scarce knew anyone. But there was one consolation. God had given him a deformed body, but his mind was straight and healthy.
Yes, there are many who are not so lucky. Those who are physically well-formed, but whose minds are unhinged.
So the poor hunchback shut himself into the world of books, and was, if not happy, at least contented. One day, when he was reading, he heard some music in the street. Looking up from his book, he saw a young girl playing an organ, while a monkey begged for alms from a crowd of idlers. The poor hunchback called the little girl over to give her a penny, not because he wished to bestow alms, but because he wanted to speak with her. They talked together, and became friends, both lonely and afflicted, but with this difference, that she was beautiful, and he was a hunchback.
Why, Solon, that's the very way you and I met.
It was then that life seemed to be filled with music. A great harmony seemed to fill the world. The hunchback was transported from the misery of the life he had led. The present was so wondrous that it occupied all his thoughts. So, Nella, he was in love with the organ girl.
Ah, oh, that's so nice.
Ah. But Zonella, he did not know whether she loved him in return. You forget that he was deformed.
But he was a good person.
The humpback hoped and feared, because Solon did not think it possible that this beautiful girl might return his love.
You have betrayed yourself. You call yourself Solon, but it is also poetic.
I have been called a poet.
A poet? A real poet who makes verses which everyone reads and talks of?
The people call me a poet, but Zonella, I cannot rhapsodize this hump off of my back, can I?
Oh, bother the hump. You're a poet, and that's enough, isn't it? You must repeat all your best things to me, won't you?
It would please me greatly. You did not ask me, though, the name of the little girl that the hunchback loved?
Come, Solon, you must play my organ box. Here, play, Solon, play. I'm so happy that I want to dance. Furbelow, come and dance in honor of Solon the poet.
It was her confession of love requited. Zonella, blushing a bright crimson, caught the lazy Furbelow by his little paws, preparing to dance. But before Solon could turn the crank of the organ, the door suddenly opened, and the tall figure of the Wondersmith appeared on the threshold. His face was convulsed with rage. When the two gypsies cautiously left the Wondersmith's shop, Galosh Street was asleep. Nothing stirred in the darkness with the exception of an unnoticed shadow that detached itself from a neighboring doorway. Producing a key from his pocket, Herr Hippa opened the door to the bird shop and they slipped silently inside, closing the door behind them. The Wondersmith produced a lantern from under his cloak. They were surrounded by every conceivable bird that might be sold as a pet.
Splendid morsels, all of them. We are going to have a rare treat, Madame Philomel. Come, get ready with the soles. Madame Philomel, I am impatient to see my little men taking lives for the first time.
Yes, they are here.
Open the cage doors and give me the bottle. Now, to invest my mannequins once again with their souls. Yes, just as before. They're coming to life.
Here they come, swarming out of the box, swords and daggers in hand. They seem to scent their prey.
Look at them swarming from cage to cage. It should just be another moment. See how they spread out like an attacking battalion.
So true. In almost every cage, there is a fierce mannequin thrusting his sword or dagger vigorously into the body of some unhappy creature. They are absolutely ruthless. Their taste for slaughter seems unappeasable. Ah, just listen to the multitude of death throes. Lives forever quenched. Such will be the lot of the Christian children on Christmas night. They are all dead, every one of them.
What a marvelous spectacle. They spill blood like crimson water flowing through a downspout. As assassins, they will be unstoppable.
The Wondersmith stood in the doorway of Zonella's bedchamber, scowling. His eyes seemed to scorch the poor hunchback, whose form, physically inferior, crouched before that baneful, blazing stare. Zonella stood frozen in the posture of one ready to dance. Furbelow pattered on his velvety little feet over towards the grim figure of the Wondersmith, holding out his poor little paw for the customary penny. But the Wondersmith was in no mood for charity.
Furbelow, no! Stop! Come back, please, Herr Hippo.
Here's a gift for your little protege, a good swift kick.
Oh, no. I think he's dead.
I hope so. If he is not, I will kill him later. Now, who are you, deformed dog? What are you doing here?
My name is Salon.
Oh, you come to visit my daughter in the nighttime when I'm away? You're a brave and gallant lover, are you not? What did you do to win the curse of a hump that decorates your shoulders? Elegant, conquering misanthrope. What are you doing here in my daughter's room?
You cannot hurl any insulting appellations at me that I have not heard before. You've demonstrated your courage, kicking a defenseless monkey.
And I'm prepared to kick another monkey senseless, you misshapen gargoyle.
Oh, yes. Brave man. Sneer at my poor form. Humiliate me, if you can. I care not. You are a wretch, and I am honest and pure. This girl is not your daughter. You are like one of those demons in the fairy tales that held beauty and purity locked in infernal spells or castle towers. I am a hunchback, but that is nothing. This girl, who is ill-treated and destitute, is the light of my life. I have come to see her because I love her, because she loves me. You have no claim on her, so I will take her from you.
Please, Herr Hippa, we love each other. I entreat you, leave us be. You have already taken the life of Furbelow. Isn't that enough?
Be quiet, girl. I'll deal with you shortly. First, I would like to come to terms with your lover, a freak suited only for circus exhibits. But before I have the pleasure of reducing him to a piece of twisted meat, which I will assuredly do, I wish to compliment you on your sagacity, humpback. You are perfectly correct in your statement that this charming young lady is not my daughter.
I thought not. She is nothing like you, and possesses every virtue that you lack.
Oh, the hunchback shows some spine, however deformed it might be. Zonella is the daughter of a Hungarian nobleman who had the misfortune to incur my displeasure.
But this girl is innocent. She has done you no wrong.
I vowed vengeance on the nobleman, and I kept my word. I have destroyed his child, not through death, but by blighting her life, steeping her in misery and poverty. Now I have discovered a new torture for her. She thought to find solace for her miserable life with a love episode. She shall have her crippled lover, shan't she? Oh, yes, she shall have him, cold and stark and livid with death.
Oh, please, Herr Hippa, have mercy.
Mercy? So it is mercy that you want. Very well. I will give him a sock full of pennies.
Oh, darling, are you all right? Salon, speak to me. Please, Salon.
Get out of the way, girl. Stay back or you'll get the same, or worse. Get over in the corner and commune with the little monkey carcass while I bind your lover with this whipcord.
You are a fiend, Wondersmith. The very devil himself.
There he is securely trussed. There shall be no escape. Now, my lopsided little lover, we will put you into your little cage until your misshapen coffin is quite ready to hold your misshapen corpse. Meanwhile, we will lock up your darling beggar girl to mourn your untimely end.
So saying, Herr Hippa, flinging a Salon over his shoulder as a fisherman might fling a net full of fish, stepped from the room with his captive and securely locked the door behind him. When he had disappeared, Zonella flung herself on the inanimate body of Furbelow with a shriek of anguish. It is night, 1 week before Christmas. All over the land, curly heads were lying on white pillows, dreaming of the coming of Santa Claus. And it was on this night that Herr Hippa and his gypsy companion, Madame Philomel, sat in close proximity around the fire in the parlor of the Wondersmith's shop. On every side, piled in heaps, inanimate, but scowling with the same malevolent expressions, lay piles of the mannequins, all clutching tiny weapons in their wooden hands. The Wondersmith was delicately applying a green glutinous substance to the tips of tiny swords and daggers with a camel hair brush. Leaving his noxious task of anointing weapons for a few moments, he declared,
"Let us drink together, dear fortune-teller. Let us drink to our approaching triumph. Let us drink to the great poison, Makusha, subtle seed of death, a massive hammer that crushes life with its resistless weight. Let us drink to it."
"It is a noble decoction, Wondersmith. Where did you obtain it?"
"It is made in the wild woods of Guyana, in silence and in mystery. Only one tribe, the Makushi Indians, know the secret. It is simmered over the fires deep in the woods. Even birds that come near drop to earth with paralyzed wings, cold and dead."
"It kills, then, fast?"
"Kills? It is swifter than lightning. But you shall see it proved before we unleash our army on this accursed city. You shall see a deformed wretch die in gruesome agony."
"What? Do you mean Solon, the young man from the bookstall?"
"Yes, Solon. I hate him, and he shall die this horrid death. Ah, how the little mannequins will leap upon him when I bring him in bound and helpless. How they will pierce him in 10,000 spots with their poisoned weapons until his skin turns blue and violet and crimson, and his form swells with the venom. He hears what I say, every word of it. He is locked in the closet next door and is listening. Ho, 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 handsome lover of Zonella, would she kiss you when you are livid and swollen? Here, take this brush, Philomel. Help me finish anointing these swords with the poison. I see the faces of millions of fresh corpses, all young, and our little army dancing and dancing, stabbing and stabbing. Philomel! Philomel, I say!"
"Yes, Herr Hippa."
"Where's the bottle of souls?"
"It is in my right-hand pocket, Herr Hippa."
Here, set it on the table, amidst our little killers. Let the souls and the bodies be together, just as you and I are together."
He reached out his hand for his glass, and with a dull sigh, dropped unconscious on the table. Overcome by intoxication and the fumes of the Makusa poison, the heavy breathing of Philomel evidenced that she slumbered also. Sure enough, Solon heard every fiendish word the Wondersmith uttered. For many days he had been shut up in that dark closet, bound with a knot that tightened the more it was pulled. The only light came through a small aperture where a stovepipe had passed at one time. Suddenly there was a faint noise above his head. Then something seemed to leap from the ceiling and alight softly on the floor. Solon was startled, but the next moment he felt some small animal crawling over his body, and a soft, silky paw was pushed timidly across his face. His heart leaped with joy.
"It is Furbelo. He is alive, and Zanella has sent him. He came through the stovepipe hole. Ah, sweet Furbelo, how good it is to see you. But wait, what's this around your neck? A knife! Zanella has found a way to save me. There, I am free. Come, Furbelo, we must go get Zanella. The door is locked, but perhaps I can burst through it. Quickly, Furbelo, to the attic. Here is the key, hung on a nail just outside the door. Oh, Zanella.
Oh, Solon, you are still alive. Praise be to the heavens. Oh, Solon, I love you so."
"And I love you too, but we must be careful and move quickly. We must get out of this house. Quiet, now follow me. Listen, what do you hear?"
"I don't hear anything."
"Precisely. Just a bit ago there was talking and the rattling of objects. Now, nothing. Dead quiet. Just a moment. Let me peek through the keyhole. Perhaps I can see what they are about. Why, they are both unconscious, with their heads on the table. They look like graven images. Here, look for yourself."
"Ah! My eye! My eye! Oh, it hurts so! What has happened to my eye?"
"Well, What is wrong, fortune teller?
It is my eye. It was set just outside the door to watch, and it has been destroyed, and it hurts. It hurts. Oh!
Did you step on something?
Yes, there was a glass object on the floor.
Stop threshing around like that, or you may... Oh, by all the gods. No. No!
Oh, good Lord. What kind of black magic is this?
What? What is happening?
There are piles of miniature dolls laying all about the room. And now they are moving. Their needle-like swords and daggers gleam in the firelight. They are thronging the two gypsies. Scores of tiny dolls are crawling up their legs, driving their knives and swords into their flesh. Oh, darling, I cannot bear to watch any longer.
Oh, please, Sona, please. Herr Hippa has treated me like a slave, and worse.
If you insist, Sonella.
Please, tell me what is happening.
We are dead. We are poisoned. Oh, accursed ones. Oh, demons. Fiends of hell.
Herr Hippa and Madame Philomel are fighting back, throwing mannequins into the fire and stomping them with their feet.
You shall die too if I die. You shall perish just as I am perishing. I gave you life. Now I give you death.
Fiends that you are to slay us. If we are to die, Wondersmith, let us have our revenge. Die, little demons!
Herr Hippa and Madame Philomel are fighting back, throwing mannequins into the fire and stomping them with their feet. They are both throwing dolls into the fireplace. The little creatures quickly catch fire. Some of them are running about the room, blazing, writhing in agony, igniting the curtains and draperies. Oh, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Now the gypsies appear to be growing more languid and slow. Their faces are spotted with red and green and violet, like eggplants. Their bodies are swelling to a frightful size and... they are dead. Gone. They did foul deeds and reaped their just rewards. And now, we must go. The chamber is a sheet of fire. Come, take my hand. We must flee, love.
The next morning, less than a week before Christmas, happy children all over the great city woke up thinking about twinkling trees, stockings by the fire, and mounds of beautifully wrapped presents, while the blue skies of heaven shone through a black network of stone and charred rafters. These were all that remained of the habitation of Herr Hippa, the Wondersmith. We hope you have enjoyed this presentation of Fitz James O'Brien's The Wondersmith, brought to you by Maplewood Barn Radio Theater and KBIA Radio. Our players in this show were Rob Gillette as the Wondersmith, Maggie Henson as Philomel, Ian Buchanan as Salon, Melissa Bolar Buchanan as Zonella. Our producer was Darren Howage. This is your narrator, Brad Buchanan. We hope you join us next week for another Maplewood Barn Radio Theater production.